Life coaching and discovery. Inspiration with an invitation to learn from a self-discovery guide. Mark is passionate about you making positive changes in your life so that it becomes a vibrant, ongoing journey of growth and discovery. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show. Now, here's your host, Mark Susnow.
Hey, hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow, and every week I have a conversation with what I call cutting-edge thought leaders, people who are shaping our lives, people that have something to contribute, people that feel very, very inspired. And this week I have Lisa Garr on, who's the author of Becoming Aware, and I think she just checked in. Are you there, Lisa?
I did. Yes, I did. Yes. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
How are you?
Pretty good. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, privilege. And you're the author of Becoming Aware. So what did you become aware of that inspired you to write that book?
Wow, a lot. I became aware of my voice, basically. I had an accident, a mountain bike accident, where I had severe brain damage, and I fell off the top of the mountain while I was racing, and I cracked my helmet in several places, had to get airlifted out. It was a very tragic experience, but not really. Because
I'm a mountain biker. You kind of scare me.
Oh, you are? Okay, so you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love mountain biking. I still ride. But that particular experience was a combination of severe dehydration and in the middle of, it was 108 degrees and it was in the middle of a very intense race. And it was right before it was over. And I lost consciousness while I was on the bike right before a long descent. So I was on the top of a hill. Mm-hmm. And so I tumbled down this hill not realizing that I had cracked my helmet in so many places and the helmet flew off and I was so delusional. But what I did is I just wound up, rather than trying to climb up and trying to get on my bike, which is what my body wanted to do, it finally gave up and I must have just passed out and slipped into this incredible stream of consciousness. I mean, it was amazing. I lost all of the pain in my body went away, all of the sensation of struggle, and I just went into this incredibly blissful state of vast expansiveness. I mean, more than it's almost, you know, when you get into an airplane and it's raining and then you go up above the clouds and the sun is setting and it's absolutely beautiful and you realize there's a whole other realm above where you are in that kind of gloomy state. That's what this was like. It was like going up into above the clouds, but it was so clear and so crystal clear to be able to see the most important part of the essence of all of it was seamlessness. Everything was connected. There was no divisions or separations or boundaries between anything. It was just, I was the clouds, I was the tree, I was whatever it was that was around.
You were the all.
Yes, yes. It was such an incredible, incredible experience. And then I started to feel these feelings of and thoughts of others. And then all of a sudden there were medics around my body. And I didn't care about them being around, you know, I didn't even notice that my body was in It was in so much turmoil. I just noticed them and their feelings, and I started to feel their types of yearnings and their desires of what they liked to do, what they were missing in their life, what they were yearning for, like that deep soul feeling. And I noticed their consciousness was enwrapped in mine as they were helping my body. It wasn't their thoughts, it was their soul's desire. of it. That was what was so interesting, because one would think, oh, take care of this person, this accident, get her, and there was a helicopter that came to lift my body out because I was failing.
Where was this?
This was in Lake Castaic, California. It was California State Championship mountain bike race. And
how old were you at the time?
This was in 99.
Uh-huh.
And so it was about 15, 16 years ago. But I remember
I'm just curious what was, you know, it sounds like when the title of your book, Becoming Aware, is that, you know, it sounds like you weren't aware of how you, before the accident happened, of how you were losing consciousness and you're dehydrated, that you weren't really aware of what your body needed.
Right.
On one
level, anyway. Absolutely. And it was such extreme conditions, too. There were several people that wound up in the hospital after that race just because of the... It was 27 miles of a mountain bike race, which isn't long, but it was over 5,000 feet of climbing. It was extreme conditions. And I wasn't listening to my body or anything else in my life before that, honestly, Mark. I was in that unconscious, climbing to the top of the corporate ladder, destroying relationship after relationship, living in the effect of my past. And it was, I was at the effect of my life, the effect of my life, rather than affecting my life. And that was exactly where God and the universe did not want me to be. And this was my wake-up call. But it was times a zillion, because I not only got a taste of what real consciousness is and got the perspective on how small I was living, and in such a tiny little container, I had this perspective of seeing my body so small, and that was so significant to me because I realized how small I was living with these blinders on, not even recognizing the expansiveness that we are as human beings. And that's one of the deepest perspectives I would love to share with people, and that I'm attempting to at this moment here. It's really
okay. I want to hear about
it. Yeah, that exists, and that we do tend to live with blinders on, and that this incredible vastness of who we are as human beings with our soul, our unlimited potential, truly, truly exists. I have been there. I have seen it. I have recognized it, and many, many people have as well. When they got that moment of bliss or euphoria or that high in life where they, you know, had that great experience happen. It could have been through an athletic event or that great relationship or that, you know, when they first met their soulmate. I mean, there could have been many instances in your life when you get out of the limited state of being and you go into that state of pure potentiality. And that's what they call it, the zone or the runner's high or whatever it's, you know, identified as. But it is a step away. It doesn't have to be through some type of momentous experience like an accident or something like that. Although that's what sometimes it takes to get us out of our locked and limited thinking. And so when I lost my, you know, as I learned when I got airlifted to the hospital and wound up with this damaged brain, along with it was my voice. My language center of my brain was also damaged. So I woke up in the hospital without the ability to speak. So everything at that moment went back into that choked feeling of, and it was very significant, of losing my voice, because I never had a voice before then. I never was told that my opinion mattered. I was never, I was always put into this kind of a very dominant mother, so it was what she wanted and how I, you know, she wanted me to be. And it was, you know, parents, as I am one now, understand how you want the best for your children, and I don't blame her for that at all. But I do see that, you know, she's a very strong woman, and to live under that was an experience for me of losing my opinion, losing my voice, losing my, you know, way. And this was all that, so it took a long time for that journey to come to fruition. It took a good 2 years for me to figure out what had happened, what coming to my voice was about, what that near-death experience was about. And how I figured it out was by interviewing people like Raymond Moody, who had interviewed thousands of people who had NDEs, and he explained my exact experience, and I thought I was the only one who had ever had that experience until I researched
right.
him, and went, oh my God, there's thousands of people who have had this exact experience. I mean, this is a phenomenon. How did this happen? And
right.
so then I
What I'm curious about was the brain damage that you had. Does this prevent you from actually speaking initially, and then after a while you were able to speak, but you just were creating the voice of what you really wanted to say? Is that kind of what happened?
Well, what I did was I actually had to go through neurofeedback and biofeedback training to
okay.
reawaken
mm-hmm.
those parts of the brain. I went through an initial assessment, and the right prefrontal cortex of my brain was dormant. It was not sending a signal. They hook your brain up to electrodes, and then a signal gets sent to the program, the computer program. And there were two areas of my brain that did not send a signal at all. And that's how they assessed which parts they needed to work on, which I luckily found a brilliant man who was creating new protocols with neurofeedback at the time, this Dr. Barry Sturman. And he was really creating miracles with kids with autism and on the
mm-hmm.
spectrum.
What's
and
his name again?
Dr. Barry Sturman. He doesn't practice anymore because he just lectures around the world. He's a brilliant man. And he was really helping kids with, you know, seizures get rid
mm-hmm.
of them. And I was fortunate enough to find this man. And I, because I had at the time couldn't function, I spent hours and hours in this waiting room, you know, just letting these kids go ahead of me because their moms were getting their kids back. It was so incredible. And I would just wait for my turn, and it wouldn't matter because what I was seeing in the waiting room was beautiful. And so then when I would go in for my session, and this was 12 months of this training several times a week
mm-hmm.
of going in with minute differences in my brain. I mean, I made small incremental changes in my brain, but it finally wound up to the fact that I could speak again, and these exercises started to retrain the cortexes of my brain through just rebuilding neurons. It was exercises. Brainnastics is what I called it. It's just exercises of the brain, and again, you don't have to go through neurofeedback to do that. As I learned later, you can replicate those experiences through visualizations, and that's one of my biggest favorite things to do these days, because you activate the mind as if the situation is happening through the mind's eye, through the occipital lobe, and you get through all of these same experiences of reawakening the cortexes and the neurons and firing them together and wiring together, as Dr. Joe Dispenza so beautifully teaches us, of how to reawaken the brain. And that's what I teach now, is finding your voice, getting your story out of you, and reawakening that vision inside of you through a daily small practice of visualization. It's easy. It's simple. I have the practices in my book that I actually take people. There are videos in my book that you can scan your phone through and go through the experiences with me, because I'm a big fan of giving value to people that they can actually take away. You don't have to go through an accident. I definitely understand if you have been through one. And if you're in that state of still clouded and foggy thinking and lack of clarity and memory loss, I completely understand the underdiagnosed epidemic of the concussion that's walking around out there. I know that person. I was that person. But there are ways that you can get out of that and that you can claim your life back. And even if you haven't been through that experience and you're in kind of a numb state, there's ways that you can get out of that and claim your life back as well, and that's kind of what my book is about.
Great. So let's. I want to just put in a little plug here for your book. I want to remind our listeners, they're listening to the Journey On show, and I'm here with Lisa Garr, the author of Becoming Aware, and we were having a discussion about her history, how she got to this place in her life, and in her book, Becoming Aware, she talks a lot about visualizations. And I'd like to, you know, and I'm sure the listeners would, is how do you integrate visualizations into your life? Do you have like a practice you do, a regular time you
yes.
do this? Do you do a lot of writing? And I know in your materials you mentioned Creative Visualization, Shakti Gawain's book, which I read years ago, which I thought was a fabulous book. And
yes.
how do you how do you go ahead and what's your strategy in terms of how people can, a lot of people do visualizations, but then they say, well, you know, it's not really working for me. And how does that differ, say, from affirmations or it's the same thing? That's kind of what I'm curious about, what your perspective is.
The visualizations for me, because of my history with the brain and understanding and actually going through the experience of rebuilding parts of my brain, I look at visualization differently. I look at it as a brain entrainment exercise. Yes, there's a lot of those out there, and you can get into the technology of that, but this is free and easy to do for your own self, and it's extremely powerful when you understand how it works. Simple visualization practices are just simply going into a theta state, just relaxing your body, and I take people through just these simple exercises of an elevator in consciousness. You can do this by yourself. You can imagine yourself stepping into an elevator or stepping on a cloud and going up and up and up into higher consciousness, higher brain thinking. Right now in the brain, what that starts to do is it starts to realign neurons, and they start to get stimulated and excited because there's something new happening, and they start to arrange into new bundles, and they start to stack together. So as you go higher and higher into this state of consciousness, I imagine passing by floors of negative thoughts, because we've been there before. We know what that's like. Mm-hmm. So just to go and rise above that. And then you come upon another floor of judgment. Been there, done that. Rise above that, because we all need to rise above our levels of judgment, self-judgment, and judgment of others, negative self-talk, and negative talk out loud. We need to rise above that because it does not serve our higher self at all. So once we get through that, and just simply, you can do this in the morning and just rise above, go to your highest level of thinking, where all of anything that doesn't serve you just drops down below you because it doesn't match the vibration you're at. And as it drops below you, you start to go higher and higher into your level of thinking, and then you step out into your floor of your dream realized, and that's where we spend the time of seeing and hearing and thinking and breathing and believing that dream realized as if it is happening and how you experience it as happening. So if finances is the goal and you realize, okay, I have now the figure in the bank that I need to feel comfortable, safe, and not have stress around money, free around money, mm-hmm. so that this isn't a worry in my life anymore, so that I can then go on, okay, so that's happened, that's there, that's done. What will I do now? How will my life be now? What will my quality of life be like now? Okay, well, I have paid off a couple of those bills, great, those got taken care of. But what's really important? What do I really want to do now that the money's in there and that the bills are paid? I really miss spending time with my loved one. I really miss having conversations that weren't full of stress. Well, what would that be like? And you go into that experience of what that would feel like, what you would do, how life would be different. And then when you're feeling comfortable in that moment, take a moment to look forward as to all of the things that will be affected in your life as a result of you feeling this sense of freedom. What will you do to make a difference, to change other people's lives, to change your trajectory of your life, and then to impact future generations? You just go further and further and further into the future to see and find that meaning, the why, the reason why that change needed to occur. And you start going out of survival and into the realm of possibility. And when you really understand what's possible, looking back on just getting that bank account balance to change becomes less stressful, less significant, and then you start to find ways to do it. Okay, I just need to do this. I just need to get this job or this income or change this or maybe take on this extra thing and generate this extra income through this online thing. And, you know, you find things start to align and get clearer when you take the stress and the pressure and the survival off of them. And you do that by going far enough into the why and to the dream realized in order to see this a little bit clearer. Do you understand? And that whole visualization process is in the book. I actually put QR codes in there where you could scan your phone across, and it takes you to a video visualization process of this experience.
Wow.
A couple
So how can people get your book?
Oh,
That's what everybody, Amazon.
It's on Amazon. And there's also additional visualization processes that I've done online, which can be found at theawareshow.com/guide, G-U-I-D-E. The Aware Show is the show that I do 5 days a week. It's my daily practice to learn how
and
to
where,
go to
community. And where can people listen to The Aware Show?
The Aware Show is on several different platforms. I'm on Hay House Radio, and I also have a TV show on Gaim TV, and also on KPFK locally here in Los Angeles, and online as well. I do online summits as well. So it all can be tracked and found at theawareshow.com. And those also, our archives are on there in the community site as well.
So people can get your book. They can listen to The Aware Show. And you're available also. I know you're a speaker. Is that right?
I have been
programs.
Since my book came out. Yes, since my book came out, I've been invited to speak at several places, which has been really fun. I mean, my whole experience has been on the radio, as you are here with me as well. And doing in-person speaking is so great because I actually get to see people. I've done radio for 15 years.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I love it.
Yeah.
I love to give talks.
You do, too.
Yeah, I've done it my whole life.
Your whole life. Yeah, I haven't. I've been just radio person.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I mean, if you like to express yourself and to share yourself, radio and, you know, music and giving talks and just sharing your wisdom. What a lot of people say to me, I think the big challenge for a lot of people is that when something traumatic, just like in relationships, when somebody has somebody's in a lot of pain because of a relationship, sometimes they get in touch with this creative part of themselves that they were never in touch with before. And sometimes it's hard to find that place unless you've had those experiences. And when you've had a life-altering experience like you do, especially when you're in a coma, it definitely triggers something. And for a lot of people to reach that, challenge for a lot of people to reach that without having to be in a coma or to have life-threatening surgery or something like that. So
right.
What do you, and I know you say, hey, we can all experience this. Do you have like a regular meditation practice to help you get into this state?
I actually do it several times a day. So the fact that I'm able to tap into it very easily. So first thing in the morning, I'm always going into this state because right before you wake up, before the conscious mind and all of the things of the day to do, it starts to bombard the brain. You're in that beautiful twilight state, and you're still in that theta state. So that is a wonderful place to go right into. And I can actually get a lot of answers there. Sometimes if there's a question that I'm trying to figure out how to do something, I'll just say, okay, so how could I figure this out? And when you drift back into kind of the sleep state, your unconscious mind starts to unveil things to you. And it's become a daily practice, a morning practice for me, to listen to those thoughts, to really listen, because that's truth speaking to you. And it could be the divine, it could be your unconscious unraveling what's really right there in front of you. And that's a really important time for me. And I have a child and very busy mornings, so this has to happen within the moments before the kerfuffle happens in the morning.
Right.
I've always said, oh, I don't have time to meditate in the morning. Well, I have never had time to meditate in the morning. But there's right before you wake up, there's time.
Right.
So that's my very important time there.
Mm-hmm. So it might just be for a minute or two before your child wakes up?
It'll be about a 10-minute window. It will. Mm-hmm. It will be. Mm-hmm. I'll spend some time in the twilight there. It's right. And I've trained my brain now to be very conscious of the to-do list bombarding me. I hold that off, and I stay in that twilight state, and I ask questions. How do I figure this out? Please give me guidance for today. I would love to get to this place. And I stay with that long-term goal, and I am always thinking of that long-term goal first thing in the morning, because it does align your brain and your consciousness towards attracting the solutions around how to figure that long-term goal out. It's constantly in my mind. It's constantly in the back of my mind or the front of my mind,
mm-hmm.
but it's constantly there. And as I go through my busy day, there are times where I'll set anchors for myself where there's little noise diets that I do during the day, and I'll just take a five-minute oasis, turn everything off, turn off the phone, step away from the computer, get off the phone, everything. Just spend 5 minutes, if it's just dropping into silence, letting go of all of the thoughts that don't serve me, all of the things and needs that have to happen and on me, demands on me, and I just let them all go for a moment, and I just drop back in, and just for a moment, so that you can hear. There's a lot of unresolved conversations that happen during the day and to things
all
that,
the time.
That you need to do, right? If you don't resolve that stuff in moments during the day, guess what? It happens all when you start to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why sometimes people can't sleep and it wakes them up at night and the brain starts going, because you don't dump that out during the day. I just reset buttons during the day very frequently. I do that. Get it out. Drop a grounding cord down. Let everything that isn't in alignment with you fall off. And then you start to just go back up in your frequency, back to your truth, and operate from that state again. Days get busy. Demands get put on you. Things happen. And there's a lot, you know, I'm late to something that, you know, frustrates me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I have to drop back into that place of, ah, where am I? Who am I? You know, re-grounding.
Right.
It's really important.
Yeah. One of the things I do in the morning is I always ask myself a question. I go, I wonder what the highlight of my day is going to be. So I'm always in that question of wondering what the highlight of my day is going to be. And it just sets the tone for the whole day. It really does. It's amazing.
To look for the highlight?
Yeah, because a lot of times it's usually between two or three really great things.
Good.
So it kind of helps you create this expectation of good in terms of,
yes,
wow.
Yes, and you come up with several by the end of the day.
Yeah. That's your biggest decision, biggest choice. What was it today? Wow, there are three things that were all really great. And
great.
It just, I just find it just shifts your the way you look at the day rather than thinking about
what went
a
wrong.
Problem.
And, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even those meetings you dread, you still are looking for the highlight. So you're rather than thinking what can go wrong, you're thinking about, well, I wonder what the highlight's going to be.
Right.
And it's
that
amazing
one,
what it, yeah, it's a great one.
One meeting could actually take your whole day down if it doesn't go well. And
exactly.
Yeah, it's your choice to turn that around. Mm-hmm.
I've been there.
Yes, we both have. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been great having you on the show. I mean, time really goes by quickly. And
I know I
again,
could talk to you all day.
I know.
That would be
fun.
You are a very uplifting person and inspiring.
Well, thank you. Well, I hope we can talk again.
Yes.
And,
wonderful.
Yeah. And that'd be awesome. And
you have such a comforting way about you. You really do. You feel like someone that you could just dialogue with all day and get nuggets out of. It's really nice to meet you.
I know. I'd like to do that.
Thank you.
I do.
Very good.
But it's taken me a while to get there.
Well, I understand, but it's you're there.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
And I'm going to read your book. I mean, I've read some of it already, yeah, that your publicist sent me, and I'm intrigued because I've done a lot of visualizations too. So I'm always curious because how somebody integrates it into their life.
It seems like
what
you're
their
into
approach
the same
is.
Thing. Yes, about inspiring possibility. I when I looked up your information, I thought, oh, good, you're really going to understand what it is that I went through, even though sometimes I'm still stumbling on explaining it to people because there's really
mm-hmm.
not words for it. It's really an experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
now,
there was a description of this feeling of where the boundaries have the boundaries are gone. Where you
yes.
kind of merge the spaciousness, I kind of refer to as almost like emerging with another person, with another being, with your environment. And I've had that experience at times. And, you know, you never know when it's going to be. And what happens, I found, is when I start to think, oh, there's that experience again, then I lose it. Then I lose it because I lose that quality because then I'm into boundaries again.
Yes.
It's that balance,
comes from,
right?
Yes. And it's, you know, it's true because most of the world does live with separation and seeing people as individual
yeah.
and separate. And that's good for a certain sense because you don't want to go walk through your day blended with everyone
right.
all the time because you won't get anything done or anywhere.
Exactly.
You definitely need to be practical within it. But there's moments where you can connect to that universal mm-hmm. sense of consciousness, or even if it's with one person, and
mm-hmm.
when you finish that person's sentences mm-hmm. or when you really, you know, have that. I was just thinking that. So was I.
Right.
That's that
right.
experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. We're actually off the air now.
Fun. Oh, good. Good.
Yeah,
That was really cool. And your book is also, it's called...
Dancing on the River, Navigating
Dancing
Life Changes.
On the River.
Yeah, and I'm working on a new one called The Soul of Uncertainty. That's what I'm working on now.
Good one.
And it's a fable.
Oh.
And I created character. Yeah, it's subject's uncertainty, but I just didn't want it to be another... You know, self-help book,
right.
Dancing on the River, you know, was kind of like that. But so I decided to create a fable around this person growing up who meets a wizard, modern-day wizard.
Ooh.
And so that's what I'm working on right now.
That's
I've actually
really
done a couple of drafts, and I'm just thinking about where to go from here, how to get it out there, and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I just saw someone speak on now in the book. Are there different characters of
yeah.
that represent different parts of consciousness, or different parts of ourselves, or something like that?
Different parts of ourselves to where
ourselves, yeah.
you know, and through them, for example, you know, there's like say about meditation. Instead of saying, well, this is, you know, instead of having like somebody talking to you about how to meditate, I create these characters where there's a dialogue about meditation. Or what
mm-hmm.
I started to share, you know, on the show, like the highlight of the day. There's a dialogue
mm-hmm.
about the highlight of the day. And, you know, or one of the characters, so, yeah, but what if there isn't a highlight? And you go, there always is a highlight. Or with meditation, what could I, in the coaching I do, I talk to a lot of people about, all the people I talked about getting into meditation, you know, first thing in the morning, they go, what if I'm not a morning person? That's what
mm-hmm.
I hear a lot, right? And I
mm-hmm.
go, well, you got to get up sometime, don't you? Even if it's 2 in the afternoon, do it then, you know?
I
create character.
Yeah.
Or let's say with relationships, you know, like as a kid, he has these, you know, two friends. He gets sent away. And I'm just going to add a little bit where, you know, they're his two best friends, you know. So you kind of get into, at the time, they're his first two best friends, this idea of best friends. Then there's a thing about soulmates, you know,
mm-hmm.
do you like, or enlightenment, do you really, you know, what is it to be with a soulmate? What does that mean? Is there really such a thing or enlightenment? You know, like today, I mean, in my life, I don't think in terms of enlightenment, but what is in my 20s I did, in my 30s. Because
right.
that's what that was the carrot, the hook that got me into meditation,
yes.
you know. Where today, at this time in my life, I'm just, you know, one day at a time.
Yes.
you
yes.
know, in terms
right.
of having more joy, more love, more, you know, more vitality in each moment. And anyway, that's kind of how I've shifted in terms of my spiritual growth. It's not anymore about, you know, this mystical state. I'm into doing it now, you know, into every day, whatever it is, you know. Or like I have one scene where he goes to the swimming hole in Hawaii and he meets this long-haired Hawaiian guy and he goes, welcome to paradise. And then the character is going, is this, you know, am I in paradise? What is paradise? Idea, this kind of, It's fun. I've never done fiction
paradise
before.
Is wherever
done...
you are in that moment. Yes, that could be paradise. And, you know, an ocean does help.
Yeah.
We associate paradise with an ocean.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, so anyway, I'm having a good time with it because I've written, I used to write poetry when I was younger, a lot of poems.
Hmm.
And I have like a monthly newsletter that's, personal growth, empowerment, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then the Dancing on the River was my story about, kind of like you, I almost drowned on the river when I was 13. And so I developed these eight principles of navigating change around this river. You know, it's a metaphor.
Uh-huh.
The real experience, it becomes a metaphor for my life. And so in a way, it's somewhat, it's creative, creative nonfiction. But this other book where I started creating characters, and I've been having a great time with it.
Fabulous. I mean, it sounds like a great idea, giving it as a fable and reading it that way. That's more fun. You're right.
It's more fun to do. Right. Yeah, and I think it's more fun for the reader, too.
True. Because I think you learn more through story. I think you are absolutely right with that.
And you remember more too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's definitely a lot of power in that. I have to go pick up my daughter, so I've got to run.
Okay. Well, listen.
Let's finish.
I'd love your support with the book. How do I get a hold of you if I want to? Get a blurb or something.
My email is lisa@theawareshow.com, and email me when you have the book ready, and then we'll get you on one of my shows. Is that okay?
Awesome. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd like to, maybe if I can't get a blurb from you and, something like that. Well, if you like, assuming you like the book,
Oh, yeah, no, it sounds great. Yeah. Sounds terrific.
Yeah.
And in that same sense of, I've done a lot of interviews, and you really have a wonderful, I could talk to you all day.
Wow.
That's really, really nice. Yes.
Likewise.
It's really nice. I just feel like you're an old friend for some reason. We must have known each other before. Very cool.
Could be. Yeah. It's interesting because as time goes on, I feel like that what you're just saying is more of a common experience. I had John Bradshaw on my show.
Oh, I did. And, he's amazing. Yeah.
This was about 6 months ago. He was on my show. And he called me before the show started, He got the time wrong. And so we talked for 2 hours, And he said,
gosh.
I feel like we're kindred souls, And
wow.
I never met him before, but it was just cool to, hear about him and his story. And he had a new book out called Post-Romantic Stress Disorder.
Yes,
what do you
I
do after the honeymoon?
About it. Yeah, I did his work a long, long time ago. I had a therapist who did his work, and I went through his program. It's incredible, talking to the pillow and beating the pillow. The inner child work, yeah. Fabulous.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Hoffman process by chance? Have you heard of
Paul Hoffman?
No, the Hoffman process.
No. Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah, okay. It's like a personal, an 8-day residential thing, and, a lot of people are, I don't know, just threw it out there. And it's a lot of inner child work.
Huh.
But you go away for you go away for 8 days. And
you would have to.
You'd have to. And you beat a pillow is what I'm getting at.
Oh, okay.
You're beating this pillow and it dries. I did the workshop. You're beating this pillow and I can't.
Pillow beating. That is a very physical memory. Yes.
It is. And that was part of the idea to get these memories out,
Yes.
Yeah. And anytime if you want to do another interview, anytime you want to, we can do it.
We could go deeper and I could shut up and let you talk more because I really
get
excited.
That's what I was hoping.
I'm so sorry. I really get excited and my message just comes pouring through me. How that goes. But
what I usually do is people call in a little bit before, and I guess maybe I forgot to tell Donna to have you do that. And then I kind of say it's like a conversation, but it doesn't matter. That's the way I like to do it is to more have a conversation,
because
we're doing now, I think it's more fun to do what we're doing now, But
this is how my interviews are. This is exactly how my interviews are. Just really fun, free-flowing conversation. But I have to get to my girl. I'm 10 minutes.
All right. Okay. So I'll email. I'll just send you a follow-up email so you have my contact. Just right now, Lisa at the awareshow.com.
Correct, yeah. theawareshow.com.
The Aware Show, SHOW. All right, perfect.
Yep.
Awesome.
Thank you. You have a
keep
great,
up the great
fantastic
work.
Day. You
keep
too.
Up the
this
work.
Is a highlight of my day. Thank you.
Awesome. All right.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
As a life coach and life discovery guide, Mark made his career change in 2001. The lessons, insights, and unique questions are provided for you in the book Dancing on the River, Navigating Life's Changes. Go to Amazon.com now and buy a copy. And tune in to Inspire Possibilities Show on PBS Radio every other Wednesday, 6 p.m., Station 1.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow. The show is a production of InspirePossibility.com, your resource for creating new possibilities in your life. Take a few minutes to visit them and explore what they have to offer. Sometimes we just need some inspiration and encouragement. And with that in mind, each week I have a conversation with individuals I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people who expand our perception of what we might think is possible. And today I have somebody like that who is an author, a transformational filmmaker. She was Woman of the Year, Professional Woman of the Year recently, and she just has a lot to share with us. She's a very well-known speaker, celebrity. And her name is Cheyenne Aziz. Did I say that right?
You did say that right. Cheyenne Joy Aziz, yes.
Well, thanks for being on the show. I'm looking forward to your sharing your wisdom.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, thank you. So you are a filmmaker and an author, Discover the Gift. And what I'm curious is what do you mean by the gift? What do you mean exactly? Where did you come up? How did you come up with that title? Discover the Gift is why we're here.
It's why we're here. Yeah, well, it's why we're here, I believe, is to discover who we really are and to share that essence with the world. And that's our purpose, and that's how we really make a difference. So ultimately, that's where I've come to, and my understanding I've come to. And, you know, the gift is really about you, and it's about discovering yourself. And there are many different ways to do that. And the journey of Discover the Gift is actually the story of a family that has gone through extreme tragedy and how that tragedy ultimately brought them to triumph and success with themselves in life because they honored their adversities and they were willing to really dive deep into themselves and into the blessings in disguise and the gift of those adversities that occurred when they were young. And so it's really the story of a family from tragedy to triumph.
Mm-hmm.
And how that unfolded, it really, you start to unfold into yourself and discover who you are by listening to the wisdom of Dalai Lama, Jack Canfield, Marianne Williamson, His Holiness Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, and many other of the greats right now. And so that's really what it's about, and there's many different ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. So what about yourself? What were you at one time, I assume you weren't always a filmmaker at some point, or an author at some point, something was going on inside yourself when you said, you know what, I want to do this, I want to write a book, I want to produce a film. So what were the circumstances? Was there a crisis in your life, a transformation to where you said, I need to do this?
Yes, actually there were many, and the story really is about our own family and my family and my brother, and we lost our mom to a car accident when I was 12 and he was 14, and
mm-hmm.
20 days before that car accident, our house burned to the ground.
Wow.
And right before our house burned to the ground, our mother and stepfather, who had been together our entire lives, broke up. And so within
wow.
the matter of about 32 days, my brother and I lost our entire lives and what we knew to be true for them. And so as children, we were needed to begin again. And how do you do that when you're 12 and 14? You really don't know. You're just moving through the steps of life. And we were lucky enough to have incredible parents who both loved us so dearly that love really allowed us to follow our gifts. And they're both artists. And ultimately, my brother and I, that those tragedies separated us. And I'm the little sister in the family, and he's my big brother. And that tragedy really put a big rift between us. And ultimately, it was our reconnection that inspired us to create Discover the Gift. And Discover the Gift is about our own story. But what we realized is that if our story can inspire others to see that there are gifts in their adversities and that there are blessings in disguise, if we're willing to look for them, if we're willing to do the work, then you actually have the ability to create a life you love. And not that it's easy or that it happens instantly, but it's possible. And so I'm actually a teacher and a counselor first. I quit high school when I was 15, and that brought me through writing and counseling and helping others, before anything else.
And now, where were you living at the time when you quit high school?
I was living in Manhattan in New York City, and I was going to a prestigious art school, which was not a match for me because I was a mess, and my mom had just died a couple years earlier. So that, to me, wasn't an option. Go ahead.
What I'm hearing you say is that there was enough of a principles, guiding principles that your parents gave you before your mom died, and that these were something that more or less form the foundation for who you are and something for you to grow into.
Very much so. Very much so. Our parents were both artists, and the gift of them both being artists were that they were actively involved in their passions every day. And so we grew up in households, because they weren't together, we grew up in households when we were with each of them where they were fully engaged in their passions and gifts. So to us, that was normal. And that was one of the blessings in disguise for us, which I believe in my now retrospective, looking back adult life, that's part of what allowed us to heal, was that we had access to those things and to know that that's what we did every day. So what brought me to being a filmmaker, honestly, was that my brother and I drifted apart after all this tragedy. And
so now you're 12 or 13, you're saying?
And my brother went one way and I went another, and there ended up being a lot of anger between us because we just had so much upset we didn't really know what to do with it. And the story really comes in our reconnection with each other and him calling me, and I won't go into all of it, but really asking for forgiveness because he's my big brother and I'm his little sister, and I basically was left alone for a long time out in the world.
So wait a minute. Are you saying that you're like 12 or 13 and you're totally on your own?
Yeah, I actually lived with a family who lived on the farm after my mom died, and I decided to stay in Vermont when my mom first died, and I lived on this family farm, and my brother went back to my father in New York City, and no one at that point knew what to do, and all I knew was I couldn't go anywhere. So I stayed, and so ultimately it was a journey of us not being connected for many years, and my brother coming back to me and apologizing, and that reconnected us. And that apology is what created a whole new world for us. And
How much time elapsed?
14.
To that apology?
Counting 28. I'm the 8 years, 9 years.
9 years, okay. Mm-hmm. So now you come together and you're in your 20s now.
Yes, exactly. And
so,
apologizes,
And then you more or less had the idea to create this film at that in your 20s, is what you're saying?
Well, interestingly enough, so it was the seed was planted, and it's a great question because I'm getting there with you, and the seed was planted in that reconnection, and my brother came to visit me one day, and we were talking, and I grew up to be a human service provider because what I learned early on was that I was in so much pain when I was young, and I quit high school, but I got really high scores, so I went on to college. And when I was in college, you had to do community service. And I chose children at this parent-child center. What I didn't know was I was going to be working with abused children. So when I went there, I all of a sudden was working with all these abused children, but every day that I went, I felt better. And I noticed the more I gave, the better I felt and the quicker I healed. So that became my journey, which was to be a human service provider. My brother decided to be a filmmaker and an MTV video maker and to go into that world. And so when we reconnected and started talking one day, my perspective, and this was the seed that was planted, you know, and here's the thing. The quality of the questions we ask determines the quality of the lives we live. The more powerful quality questions we ask, the deeper our soul and being goes to answer those questions, right? You ask a question, you automatically want to answer it.
So what was the question you asked?
The question asked was, when does the man I know going to match the work he's doing in the world? Because it's not a match. Because my brother is really powerful. He's one of the most powerful people I've ever known in my life, not just because he's my big brother, but because you feel his energy before it comes a mile down the road. He made 3,000 Miles to Graceland with Kevin Costner and Courtney Cox, and that was his first big baby in the film world, and he wrote it and produced it and directed it. And so his world is big in energy like that. And so what my world went to was healing people who had been hurt or abused or were suffering. And so my question to him, because that's the world I lived in, was, when is the work you do going to match who you are? Because it's not a match, because he's so powerful, and his ability to change lives and make a difference with his films is in the palm of his hands, but he hadn't done it yet. And I didn't understand why. That was the seed, which was the beginning of the creation of Discover the Gift, which ended up now being... Go ahead.
Yeah, so it sounds like you had this big vision, and you saw your brother, in a way, was your partner in this vision, and he didn't know it yet.
He didn't know it yet, and I didn't know it yet, which was the beauty of it. What I knew was that he had to do something that was more powerful than what he was doing, because I didn't understand after we had reconnected why he wasn't doing things to help people, because he really likes to blow things up, and he really loves to blow things up, like, you know, big blow.
Right.
Big boom.
Yeah, yeah.
Big fire.
Big blow up.
Big blow up.
Big blow up.
In every way. In every way. So
blow up, blow hard.
Exactly. And I wanted to see a difference in that in him. That was really my intention. And so ultimately we ended up,
way,
my husband and I, go ahead.
So in a way, what I'm sensing is that you have this desire and need inside yourself to really help others. You were saying you're a service provider to other people.
Yeah.
And here it is, your brother, you wanted to empower him to more or less step up and make a big difference.
To a higher purpose.
In the world.
Yeah,
yes.
And to actually make a difference in the world, because he's really good at entertaining people. And if he can entertain that many people, then he can uplift at least 1% of that many people he's entertaining, if not all of them. And so to me, it wasn't a match, and I wanted him to do more.
You know, there was a question I wanted to ask you, and we started to get into the story, which I want to keep going on. But this idea of adversity, do you think that in every adversity there's a gift?
I do. I actually very much do. I don't think they're always easy or comfortable or the best things, but I do believe if we're willing and open to look for one, that we find more comfort and less burden.
I mean, that's a big one for a lot of people. I mean, I have the same belief you do, and always look for the gift. And even in our, even when, you know, whatever's going on is what's a deeper message? What is the gift here? What can I learn here? And how can I grow from it? And even to be grateful for some of these difficult
moments.
Yes, love
that you brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I've, gratitude is a big part of my life. And so in all these tragedies, I mean, but it's sometimes difficult when these things, when we're in the middle of it, you know, our
it is.
Mother gets, and, our parents get divorced, our mother dies in a fire, did you say?
In a car accident, but my house had burned down 20 days before.
And all these things are going on, and it's kind of hard to go, okay.
It is.
Where's the gift
here? It's really
hard. I mean, we're grieving.
It is hard.
Yeah.
There's the gift, and, number one. You're alive. But however, it is hard and it's not easy. And often those gifts, I believe, don't show up sometimes for years. And sometimes it takes working at them to create the gift, right? So, for example, let's look at the Amber Alert system for a moment. The Amber Alert system in the United States of America was created because one family's daughter was abducted. And there was nothing like it in the United States to help her. There was nothing like it. That family took their greatest adversity, their deepest wounds, their biggest pain, and they went on a mission.
Yeah, you're talking about Polyclass?
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about,
Yeah, that was that where I live. Yeah.
Okay, so thank you for saying the names, because to me it's the idea of that. It's the idea of the gift of that family decided, let's do our best to have that not happen for other families to the very best of our ability. That's the blessing in disguise. You know, my mother died when I was... Go ahead.
Yeah, or the mothers against drunk drivers. Same idea.
Thank you. It continues to go on and on, exactly.
Yeah.
And the Amber Alert system is one we can all go, oh my gosh, that's right, if we're parents or have children we love. It's a connect. It's the mothers against drunk driving. It's those tragedies that were turned into something that was beautiful, and they don't always have to be so huge like that, right? Sometimes it's just that you're a person that you care about another being that creates the most incredible life for that being because of your care. So my mom died when I was 12. I lost, like, right when I was, you know, becoming a young woman, I lost the most important person in my life. However, fascinating enough, I just returned about an hour and a half ago from my visit to one of her very best friends, who has known me since before I was born and has been my auntie and my soul mama since my mom died. And so when my mom died, what happened was her three best friends each took over parenting me and never let me go. And so the gift of my mom dying, even though I would do almost anything to have her here and to be able to be with her, the gift is that I got three moms. And I am who I am today because my mom died and because all of those women stepped up and stepped into my life and never left.
I want to remind our listeners, excuse me one second. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Journey On show. My guest today is Cheyenne Aziz, who's the author and filmmaker of the film called The Gift. You're the gift. It's the gift.
Discover the gift.
Discover the gift. And you know, I always think, I always say sometimes in my writings that be the best you can be. And everybody, and that's really what a lot of times we get hung up with what our purpose is for being here. And sometimes it's just to be the best we can be. We don't know necessarily what our contribution is. But by us being true to ourselves, that's what I feel is kind of our gift. In a way to the world, is our being our unique self, to really understand, to be us.
Unapologetically authentic,
Yes.
And
so your brother and you decide to do this film, and so how long did that take to do the film?
Well, fascinatingly, it started with a movie and a book, really, and I wrote the book, which created the structure for the film, and we did them basically together, and it took almost 2 years to do all of it, and both of them, and I wrote like crazy for a year, and we actually lived on top of the film studio, and so I would write all day and go down and meet with the editors and my brother and the team downstairs and give them more stuff and more things and video and transcripts that I wanted in, and it took about 2 full years of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of an incredible team of people. Yeah.
And so today, if people want to see the book, want to read the book or to watch the movie, how can they get a copy of your book and how can they see the movie?
Well, thank you so much for asking. So the ebook is not out yet, but it will be out soon. And you can order the books usually on Amazon, or you can get signed copies from me. And you can find me on Facebook and at discoverthegift.com. And so you can also go to Gaiam and Gaia TV, and they're one of the leaders in spiritual films. And you can get a free, I think if you sign up, you can actually download the movie for free if you sign up for a 3-month trial. And also on Google Play and Yekra and many different places.
And so when did the movie come out?
In 2011, and it is the book is published in 22 countries, 23 now, and 13 languages.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you for discovering your gift and sharing it.
Well, it's my pleasure,
and
it's really been an incredible journey. And one of the incredible things that really came out of it that I want to share with you and everyone who's listening is about the process of really honoring your passions, right? When we take time out of our busy days, even if we just honor ourselves enough to take a few minutes to be with the things that light you up and inspire you, that give you energy and give you joy, those are the things that help us live a life that we love. And there's so many ways to do that. And one of the things for me that was such a gift that came out of Discover the Gift is that I'm a teacher and a counselor. And people all over the world started contacting me and saying, train me, train me. I want to be a coach. I want to be a life coach. I want to teach your work. Because in Discover the Gift, there's the 8 steps and how you go do that. And so for me, that was like the most delicious gift, was that I get to teach people how to support others in discovering their own gifts. And that's what lights me up and inspires me more than anything else. And continue to really share that around the world, because the more we do that, we create a place our children can thrive in.
It's interesting. My first book was called Dancing on the River, Navigating Life Changes, and I have 8 principles of navigating change. So would you share your principles with the audience?
I would love to, and I want to hear yours, too. That's awesome.
Yes.
Okay, so my principles.
This is what we call the list show. We'll discover our gifts, our list gifts.
Steps, right? And these are steps, and the reason I say steps is because we can't just sit back and think about the things that we want to have change or happen in our life. We have to take action. So change and transformation occur when action happens. And so that's a really key piece. And so my 8 steps begin with step 1, which is receptivity, right? Being open and receptive, anything new to a new possibility. Because there's no way we can change or shift or discover if we're not open. You know, one of the things I want people to know is that I come to this work, I'm a master educator and I also have a master's in psychology. So I come to this work really understanding and really firmly believing it's the braiding of these two modalities together that really support us in developing ourselves very deeply. So step 1 is receptivity. Step 2 is intention. Step 3 is activation. Step 4 is infinite feedback. The more we give, the more we get of anything. Step 5 is vibration and energy. Step 6 is adversity and transformation. 7 is creating a conscious and compassionate world. And 8 is love, the ultimate gift. And it's really about following your heart, your authentic self, and going through the process of discarding that which doesn't serve you, like really letting those things go, like a tree sheds its branches, right, when they don't serve them anymore, so that you get to continually evolve with each choice you make and become you. And that's the gift. It's really you.
And these are what, so you, in your book, you kind of go into more detail about how to do that.
Yes. So step 1, receptivity. 2, let's begin to talk about intention, right? You can't do anything without a clear intention, right? I want that yogurt in the refrigerator. That's your intention, is to go get that yogurt. It's the same with discovering your gifts, but accessing a deeper part of yourself, and with taking action, which is step 3. So you have clear intention, and then you really need to take action with that intention. and to understand that it's energy. So the more you give, the more you get of anything, right? Of anything. Just
uh-huh.
The more you give, the more you get. So then it's taking action into that and understanding then the next step, how energy works. And so it's really understanding the basic universal principles and universal spiritual laws and those principles behind them and utilizing those. And then it's utilizing the wisdom within each of those steps of Dalai Lama and Jack Canfield and Marianne Williamson and a bunch of the amazing people out there today.
Mm-hmm. So this is in, so this is your, these are your steps for people really teaching other people, more or less.
Yep, and teaching yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and teaching yourself. And each step within it has a meditation, you know, like a mm-hmm. real basic way to just take a moment and get present. You know, that's all key pieces of all of this is, you know, and mindfulness is overused, but getting present, I think, is key.
Now, if people want to get a hold of you, can they email you?
Please, I would love it if you would email me. And you can reach me at, okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
S-H-A, J like John, E-N, at discoverthegift.com.
That's easy.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Mm-hmm.
So are you, would you like to hear the 8 steps in my book of navigating change?
I would love to.
And by the way, my new book, my new book is called The Soul of Uncertainty, which will be coming out real soon. But these are the 8 principles I came up with. I wrote this book about 6 years ago. And the first one is to connect with your center. The second one is be grateful. Third one is be curious. Mm-hmm. Fourth one is to be prepared. The fifth one is to get out of your comfort zone. Sixth mm-hmm. one is to let go of resistance. The seventh one is to be willing to be connected. You know, we can't do it alone. And the eighth one mm-hmm. is a little bit like yours. And instead of saying love, I say embrace the great mystery, which is kind mm-hmm. of love in a way, because love is a mystery.
It is. And I mean, I don't mean love in like the romantic way too, you know, like love and all-encompassing love, right?
Yeah, it's more like a state of being, like a state of being.
Exactly.
Is that what you
exactly.
think?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, it's your being.
Yeah.
It's how you show up and who you are, right? When you show up, who shows
yeah.
up? That's the great Dr. Barbara DeAngelis, who I love. That's one of her great mm-hmm. teachings, I think, is like when you show up, who shows up? And what do I want to show up in my space? Then it helps me know how I need to behave and how I need to be.
Right. And I think, you know, what I found, there's like a shift at some point in your life, because when we think about love, we're always, you know, we're thinking of a particular object of our love, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to embracing, and so to growing into this state. It's almost like a noun. Love is, I mean, it's instead of an object, it's something inside of us. And
right.
That's,
exactly.
That was a big shift for me. I would
and
say,
that's exactly. Thank you for. Yes, that's it.
Yeah. Yes. And
mm-hmm.
and so you yes. coach, so if people can have individual sessions with you, or you just train people to coach other people?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. You can absolutely have individual sessions with me. You can have individual, small group, business, and organization. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then you travel to organizations if they want to have trainings and stuff like that.
I do. Yep. I just came back from Manhattan an hour ago, and 3 weeks ago I was in San Francisco. And so I work a lot with individuals within large organizations, and usually it's people that are managers and coordinators and directors who have an immediate impact on the people they work with.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, it's been very enlightening to have this conversation with you, and I always find that there's so many amazing people out there that have these gifts to share, and there are a lot of people that we don't even know about that have gifts, and it's just that we have
yes.
to be willing to really tune into them,
yeah.
to tune into them and discover what their gift is and. So
be receptive
that's something
and open,
that,
you know.
Yeah. So I like your simplicity in a way to kind of, I mean, we're the gift. We're the gift.
We're the gift, right? We are the gift, and it's really that simple. And honoring yourself that deeply and believing in yourself that deeply that you're that important and that worthy really makes a difference on this planet, like really. And some of the best ways to begin this journey, if you haven't already, is to just focus your newly receptive mind, right, receptive, on what you want, you know, and to start to ask questions like, who am I? Who am I really? You know, what lights me up and inspires me? What is my gift? You know, I was telling my story earlier, which I don't always tell, but about how service is where I found out what my gift was. I was in such pain around my mom dying still when I had started college, but it was being of service that where I discovered some of that. So other questions, how can I serve? What is my purpose? You know, where do you want to spend your time? And one of the cool things for those that are listening, a really neat thing to do is to go and think about 5 to 8 people who know you really well and ask them. Ask them what your gift is. Ask them if they have a few minutes to really sit down with you and be present. And ask them what they think and make sure you write down everyone's answers and really look at them and be with them. And the key is to be prepared that they're going to ask you, too, what you think their gift is, right? So be prepared to share that as well.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. 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 Imagine the possibilities.